What's up, family? You are tuned into Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. From KPFA Radio and the Pacifica Network, I'm your host, Kat Brooks.
The show is Law and Disorder. I'm Brian Edwards-Tiekert sitting in for Kat Brooks. We are going to turn to the national news where there is a political scandal brewing in the right-wing media sphere that looks like the first real threat to Donald Trump's relationship with his own base. For years, the right has had this simmering obsession with Jeffrey Epstein, who was this well-connected wealth manager who operated a private island and was facing charges of sex trafficking children when he died of apparent suicide in a New York jail. And lots of people close to Donald Trump's orbit and who command the eyeballs and ears of a lot of Donald Trump followers have thought there is a lot more to the story, have demanded the release of all of the files possessed by the Department of Justice concerning Jeffrey Epstein and his associates, and extracted what they thought was a campaign pledge from Donald Trump to do so. And recently, his administration has done just the opposite. His attorney general, Pam Bondi, has closed the Jeffrey Epstein investigation without releasing any new files, denied the existence of files she seemed to admit the existence of earlier in the Trump administration. And just this week, the Trump Department of Justice filed the prosecutor who handled the Jeffrey Epstein case. It's a story that if you track the right-wing media, which I don't very closely, just seems to not be going away for Donald Trump and is putting him at odds with people like the conspiracy slinger Alex Jones and fired Fox News host Tucker Carlson. So we've invited on someone who is extremely online to walk us through what's happening and the stakes. Adam Mockler is host of the Adam Mockler Show on YouTube, where he operates in a different media century than we do. He's got about 1 million subscribers there. Thanks very much for speaking to us.
Thank you for having me on. I'm excited to chat.
Welcome to the 20th century media. Walk us through who the figures are on the right that are pressing this and how big a challenge this is to Donald Trump.
Yeah, so one of the big problems with this case in particular is that the Trump administration and the MAGA sphere basically planted the seeds for this own conspiracy theory tree in their base. So you have a lot of the pundits in a top-down way actually pushing back against the admin. Now, it gets a little bit complex because some of them are going back and forth. For example, there's Charlie Kirk, who ran a lot of the on-the-ground voting apparatus for Donald Trump. He was immediately not okay with the cover-up. He immediately, at his Turning Point USA event last weekend, was saying that the Trump admin needs to be way more transparent. But then 2 days later, he comes out and says, I'm done talking about this case. Trump called me and I'm no longer talking about this. While that's going on, you have other figures, as you mentioned, Alex Jones. You have a lot of top-tier pundits like, I'd say, Tucker Carlson or even a Bill O'Reilly was defending Trump. Tucker Carlson was going against Trump. It's really interesting to see the factions that are splitting up here. And I think Trump is only making it worse for himself at this moment. He's digging himself in a deeper hole by attacking his supporters, saying they were conned, they were duped. And a lot of his arguments are just inherently contradictory. How are you going to say that the client list doesn't exist 1 week? The next week, it was written by Obama. But then anyone who actually fell for the Obama hoax is a stooge. But then with that logic, Pam Bondi, his own attorney general, is the one who pushed this exact thing. So I honestly think this is just such a blatant, brazen lie that Trump supporters can't accept it. One I've been following is Matt Walsh. He works for the Daily Wire. Matt Walsh has been leading the lines and somebody who's just really relentlessly pushing back against Trump. And I never thought I'd see the day where this dude, who's like a hardcore Trump sycophant, is now pushing back.
And that's not necessarily a matter of principle. It could just be a result of him looking at his analytics when he posts a new video and saying, this Jeffrey Epstein thing is really catching fire with my audience.
Yeah, there is definitely a lot of audience capture that could be had there. I would like to think if Matt Walsh could get away with covering for the Trump admin, they may be able to. I just literally think the lie is so brazen in this case, they can't even lie. Like, Matt Walsh would have to stretch himself into pretzels to try to explain what Pam Bondi is doing.
So the implication here for someone predisposed to suspicion of elites, which is a lot of the Trump base, is that the Trump administration is suppressing release of files because they somehow implicate Donald Trump, who was a known associate of Jeffrey Epstein.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's the main leading conspiracy, and that's where any rational brain would go. Where I've landed is I think Pam Bondi way overpromised and got a little bit zealous and honestly tried to use the sexual abuse of children as a political stunt, as a tool, and even using influencers at the White House to try to promote this stunt. So I think that Trump is not... Here's where I've landed again. Like, I don't think that Trump is covering up something absolutely absurdly insane. I think a lot of that speculation, I genuinely think that they way overpromised. And when they came crashing into the inertia of Washington and realizing, wait a minute, there isn't a client list with 16 different celebrities, they realized they kind of trapped themselves. But any MAGA supporter who is, like you said, predisposed to believing conspiracy theories or has been following the MAGA train for a while is immediately going to have their brain broken. How do you... Like, what people have to understand is the Epstein client list was the basis for a lot of conspiracy theories since 2019. And even before that, there was groundwork in the form of these Pizzagate conspiracy theories. Like, these pedophilia conspiracy theories have been going around for a while. QAnon is built on them. So now you have a huge faction of the MAGA base who, I just say in a blunt way, are having their brain broken by this cognitive dissonance they're facing.
Right. But, I mean, in the case of Jeffrey Epstein, like, the child trafficking was real. He pled guilty to soliciting a minor in Florida. He was facing prosecution for trafficking in New York. I don't understand what the significance of the purported client list is. My understanding is we already know who was in, like, his personal contact book, his little black book. We know who was on the flight manifests for his private jet. Like, what is the client list supposed to deliver for people concerned about this on the right?
Here's the thing. The reason why the Epstein case is so mainstream is because, as a society, there's been this collective presupposition, not even just among conspiracy theorists, but even average people, who basically have this presupposition that the Epstein client list must be full of a bunch of celebrities, top-tier politicians, and people covering for each other, people covering for said celebrities. This was something that was just like kind of accepted by large swaths of the public. So it's really hard to then back up. Here's the problem. The Trump admin and the Trump MAGA world, they're the ones, like I said earlier, planted all of the seeds of these conspiracy theories, saying there's a client list, it implicates all these Democrats, Obama's going to be on the client list, this person's going to be on the client list. You know, so when the client list doesn't end up coming out, that's why it's blowing up so largely in their face. In the online sphere, this supposed Epstein client list is huge for MAGA. It's one of their core things. And Pam Bondi knows that. That's why Pam Bondi played it up about 5 months back when she had all those influencers at the White House. She knew what she was doing. She was playing to the base because they think this client list will blow up the entire administration. I mean, or the entire political deep state. I mean, if you're a three-time Trump voter, you're just waiting for Trump to come in there one of these times and blow up the entire deep state. People were expecting that. They thought the list was going to drop. They thought it was going to be big. And Pam Bondi overpromised.
So two theories on why they haven't released a list. One, it doesn't exist. They promised to release something that doesn't exist. Two, information in that client list reflects poorly on Donald Trump and or his close associates. Isn't there a more plausible, more innocent explanation, which is like Jeffrey Epstein's associate, Ghislaine Maxwell, is still appealing her convictions on related charges and you don't spill all the files you have while you're in the middle of litigation?
That is the easy argument to make, but the problem is that's not the argument the Trump admin was making. They were kind of promising to release the list. They were promising a lot of things. If they would have came out and gave that exact argument, I don't think the blowback would be as much as it is. Like, if Trump came out and was like, listen, well, there's a lot of stuff in here. I mean, he said something like to this effect, but he's also said a lot of other stuff in between. But if their message was just literally, hey, listen, we're still doing this investigation. We're going to bring it to you guys when we can. That would be way different than making a whole stunt show out of it, having seven different influencers holding up binders with Epstein's name on them, which is basically just sensationalizing sexual abuse of children. I think that the argument that you just listed could be a good third option. Also, the first two aren't mutually exclusive. I think Trump's names are likely in the files. We know that they're in the files just because he was close with Epstein. He was friends with Epstein. That doesn't mean he did anything terrible. But I also think that they both overpromised, and Trump's names are likely in the files. So then imagine how disappointing that would be to MAGA when they get the list. Not only is it so disappointing, but Trump's name is also somewhere in there.
Right. Also, he's Donald Trump, so he probably did something terrible. Guy was bragging on a hot mic about sexual assault. We're speaking to Adam Mockler. He's host of the Adam Mockler Show on YouTube. He is translating the kerfuffle in the right-wing media sphere over the Jeffrey Epstein files and the Trump administration's failure to release them, which seems to be the first serious challenge to Donald Trump's relationship with his political base. I'm curious what lessons we're learning about the relationship between Trump and right-wing influencers who he doesn't have leverage over. You mentioned the case of Charlie Kirk, the 31-year-old wonder kid who founded Turning Points USA, who has basically publicly announced that after a call with Donald Trump, he is keeping mum on the Epstein files from now on. What does Trump have on Charlie Kirk that he doesn't have on the other right-wing influencers who are speaking out about this?
I think Trump and Charlie Kirk share a power base to a large extent. Charlie Kirk's power comes from the fact that he was so integrated into the canvassing of Trump's campaign that this 31-year-old wonder kid was essentially running like a huge canvassing operation, and that gave him power. So he doesn't want to lose the movement that he's built up, MAGA. He's like, Charlie Kirk has built up MAGA. On the other hand, Trump also gets a power base from Charlie Kirk, so they have a mutually beneficial relationship. I think when it comes to Trump's relationship with a lot of these influencers, you know, a lot of people are still wondering how this is all going to play out. So I can't say anything with complete, obviously, confidence. But I have seen a lot of influencers online getting very soured after Trump said they were duped yesterday. Trump said something to the effect of, these people are being duped by a Democratic hoax, and like idiots are being duped. That really made a lot of MAGA influencers and pundits angry. Like, hey, I've given the last 6 years of my life defending you, and now you're just going to say that I got duped because of a case that you have talked about. So I think Trump has a lot of control over these influencers in a top-down way, but not the control he's in.
Can't say that word on the air. Sorry. We're an FCC-regulated broadcaster.
That was my bad. I think that when Trump's being mean to political enemies, obviously the MAGA pundits love it. But now the MAGA pundits are the target of Trump's rage, and they are obviously not liking it. I wouldn't say he has direct control over a lot of the MAGA influencers, but they'll listen to him. He can place his thumb on the scale and change their mind.
It also seems like an issue he just doesn't have an easy out from. Like, if it's what his base is talking about, he can't not talk about. If he doesn't have files to release or is unwilling to release them, he can't resolve the issue. The people that his administration has restricted his press conferences to are mostly reporters working for right-wing media outlets that care about this story and are running with it. So it's like coming up in his media availabilities. He just can't use his presidential bully pulpit to leave the story behind.
Yeah, you made a really good point earlier that no matter what the explanation is, it looks really bad for the admin. Either they were sensationalizing the abuse of children for political purposes, or if the client list is real, they're covering it up for political purposes. Either look really badly on the admin. And of course, you gave the third example, but that's not really the argument the Trump admin's giving. I think somebody desperately needs to tell Trump that the more he talks about this, the worse that it looks for him. Every single time he's gone out in public over the past, let's say, 48 hours, he's dug himself into a deeper grave or a deeper hole. This is after he's already being hoisted by his own petard by giving these conspiracies depth in the first place. But yeah, I think overall he's going to continue to be asked about it. He thought this would go away quickly and didn't realize that he can't just bully MAGA pundits and other people into accepting his narrative on this.
He started accusing them of being fooled by Democrats after, you know, congressional Democrats took this up as an issue. Ro Khanna led the charge to get a vote in the House of Representatives on demanding the release of the Epstein files. I did wonder, watching that unfold, if elected Democrats taking up this issue that came out of the right-wing base would cause partisan polarization and cause people to reflectively side with Donald Trump, who'd been going at him over these files.
I wondered that as well, but we haven't really seen much of that. It seems like MAGA is still steadfast in saying, listen, this isn't a Democratic hoax. Obama probably has nothing to do with it. Obama has nothing to do with it whatsoever. There was obviously part of an investigation in his first term, but the main investigation into Epstein happened when Donald Trump was president. Epstein died in prison when Donald Trump was president. These are unavoidable facts that have nothing to do with Democrats. So I think that Republicans are going to have a really hard time saying this is a Democratic hoax. It's really funny seeing my MAGA friends from high school saying, you know, why is Trump sending out these long, unhinged posts on his social media platform? I've never seen him do this before. And I just remember thinking, dude, he does this almost every single day about every single issue. You just don't pay attention to the issues other than the Epstein files. So it's interesting seeing the MAGA audience kind of opening their eyes to Donald Trump's cynical spin of political events. When there's finally a topic that the American people are rather united on, hey, we just want transparency, he tries to pivot back to the most divisive talking points and topics possible. He pivots back to crooked Hillary, or he says the Russia hoax. He's very intentionally trying to pivot back to topics that are divisive, and MAGA's not biting. Well, portions of MAGA aren't biting.
Yeah, also made an announcement that he's in negotiation with Coca-Cola to replace corn syrup with sugar. So you're saying you're seeing people pay attention to the topics he's avoiding for the first time.
Yeah, people are. This is what I said to my friend the other day. This is the first time that the headlines are controlling him and he's not controlling the headlines. He's got a really unique ability to control the narrative, to say something wild and just understand that it'll end up in the headlines. But the past few days, it's kind of felt like I've been wondering if this is a distraction, because I don't usually think like that. I'm not usually thinking he's playing like 3D, 4D chess. But I'm like, how is Trump repeatedly going on camera and just being controlled by the headlines, being asked this question, and he repeatedly melts down. He has no self-control. So yeah, once again, I think this is the first time the narrative is getting a hold of him rather than him getting a hold of the narrative.
So my theory of like political power today is Donald Trump is able to get things through Congress because he can bully Congress members into submission because he controls the loyalty of the base they need to hold on to office. If that starts to fragment, what would be the signs of defections? Are we seeing anyone in the House of Representatives who wasn't already on the outs with Trump say, yeah, maybe he should release the files?
Your theory of power is something that I totally agree with. I think that if J.D. Vance did win the 2028 presidency, he wouldn't have the same cult-like effect because he doesn't have the entire voter base wrapped around his finger. He can't threaten the primary Republicans in Congress. I think what we see are not people converting to like liberalism or like turning from MAGA. I think that we just see less dogmatic Trump supporters as a whole. We see less people who are willing to defend every single step he takes, and people who apply a little bit more critical skepticism to his actions. Because, man, if this doesn't open up your eyes and just make you ask questions, I don't know if anything will. There are a few MAGA pundits. I believe you asked if anybody has separated that before, has just like held the line really strong. So many people. Like earlier I was saying Matt Walsh. This dude has held the line through every single scandal, every single thing that's happened, and he's the one leading the way on calling out Trump now. So honestly, I've been surprised at a lot of the spine that Republican pundits are showing here.
Or again, fidelity to their analytics over fidelity to
Very
Donald
true.
Trump.
Very true. Sorry, I'm too charitable sometimes. Very true.
Well, you live in this world in a way I don't. You post multiple videos a day to your YouTube channel. You're on a bunch of different platforms. You are broadcasting to a Generation Z audience. You know, we are broadcasting to an audience that on average is probably older than your parents. What kind of capture does your space create for influencers? How much is the audience response in the driver's seat?
I'd say when you're on any algorithmic platform, there is a certain level of tailoring your content to maximize your algorithmic reach, but that doesn't mean you have to sacrifice the contents of what you're saying. So something that I've really been doubling down on lately is leading by example when I know my audience disagrees with me. Something that I'm very a big advocate of is people that believe what I believe, like people on the left, going into spaces that are hostile and debating Republicans over and over, just debating, getting our ideas out there. A lot of my commenters will actually say that I'm wrong there. They'll be like, Adam, you're just giving airtime to MAGA. So this is a battle that I've had with my audience for a while. Lately, I've just been leading by example in every single video I explain why we need to be out in these spaces, we need to be doing these things. There was a time during the election when I was trying to explain to my audience, hey, this photo of Trump after he almost got shot raising up his fist is a really cool photo that's going to, like, it's good optics for him. And my audience was really mad when I said that. They were like, Adam, why are you playing defense for Trump? It's such a dumb photo. And that's an example of my audience turning on me. But I doubled down and was like, listen, these are good optics for him. These are just the facts. So to answer your question, to loop back, audience capture does exist for sure, especially in right-wing spaces and left-wing spaces where you garner an audience that believes something so dogmatically that when you break from that position even slightly, they turn on you. But I've tried to circumvent that by setting the precedent with my audience that I'm going to lead the way on some of these issues. Now, if I'm wrong on something, I totally welcome them to challenge me back, but I'm not going to let them guide my daily views, the only thing that I do change for them is how I brand the videos to optimize the algorithm. But that's not really something I have control over. There's just a larger algorithm that you have to play.
Yeah, you just got to throw a lot of words in all caps.
Oh, always all caps. Yellow text, too. And that works. It was, if it didn't work, you know what sucks? People always say, Adam, why are your titles in all caps? So then I'll make a video that's not in all caps and nobody watches it. And I'm just like, okay, so.
All right. Adam Walkler, I appreciate you taking us on a romp through the media of the 21st century and how it is producing the first big fissure we've seen between Donald Trump and his base.
I really appreciated chatting. Let's do it again. Sorry for saying the A word on air. That was bad.
We managed to dump it out. So that is Adam Walkler. He is host of The Adam Walkler Show, which is on YouTube. Got over a million subscribers. So he knows what he's talking about when he speaks about optimization and analytics and audience capture, which seem to be some of the dynamics at play in our national politics right now.
You've been listening to Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. That's it for this episode, family. You can find more information about topics and guests in this episode's show notes. Law and Disorder is produced at KPFA. That's listener-supported radio on the Pacifica Network. The show is produced by Jesse Strauss and hosted by me, Kat Brooks. Our theme music was composed by Steve Raskin of Fort Knox 5. If you like what you heard, please follow us on social media at Law and Dis, that's D-I-S, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Feel free to holler at us about something you heard or send us a show idea at lawanddisorder@kpfa.org. You can also find our content live at 8 a.m. weekdays on KPFA. That's 94.1 FM in the Bay Area. Our show and all of KPFA's programs are funded exclusively by you, the listener. And if you're in a position to support us, please donate today at kpfa.org. Take care of yourself and take care of each other. We all we got, fam.